the OTB Podcast Network.
16 minutes past nine this morning here on OTBAM. I'm delighted to say Simon Hughes of The Athletic is with us as we talk about Liverpool. Good morning to you, Simon. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. Not too bad.
What's going on? What do you think is going on?
Well, I mean, where do you start? I mean, it's not just one reason, is it, why Liverpool are in this position? A lot of people keep asking me, you know, there must be something sort of behind the scenes. There must be some sort of conflict at the club. You know, I don't detect that at all. I just don't. I just think that a lot of the things that people have spoken about are the major problems at the moment. You know, combination of things got dating all the way back until the summer, really, for me, where, okay, I appreciate a lot of, you know, each team didn't have a proper pre-season, but given that the Liverpool team under Jurgen Klopp, a lot of the success has been related to, I'd say, availability and the fitness of the players, first and foremost, above anything else. And since the summer, really, that's been a problem. I know every club went into the season with players that were missing. But I think particularly for Liverpool, a team that in the key areas, they don't change the position. You don't rotate so much. It's only really the midfield that they sort of rotated in previous seasons. And I think full-back areas haven't been as productive because the players are tired up front. Again, it's quite clear what the problem is there. And then defensively, so it's a structural problem. Confidence is eroded from there. Injuries before that, you know, it's all the things that people have seen. But it's pretty dramatic. A dramatic fall, which is sort of rooted, as far as I'm concerned, in the summer months when they weren't able to do the sort of preparation they would normally do for the season, I think.
I've seen Klopp get blamed for not changing his style of play and not anticipating the fact that post-lockdown there was going to be a knock-on on the team's fitness for this season. That's definitely one way of reading what's happened. There is another way, which would look at how he managed to maintain the squad's brilliance over that 2.5-year period where they won the Champions League, reached the Champions League final, finished second, win a Champions League, win the league, and now they're at this point where that tiny squad, in retrospect, massively...
Yeah.
I don't know if it's massively overachieved because they were so good, but I see these two things as kind of slightly being in conflict. You can't give him crap for not changing things around and then go, well, he should have known this was going to happen. Look at what he's just delivered.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's not above criticism. I thought the Fulham performance was alarming. It was the first time I've seen a Liverpool team under his management sort of felt like he'd throw it through the towel in a little bit for me. Klopp wasn't particularly animated on the touchline. I wasn't at the game, but speaking to people who were there, he was pretty subdued, I think. So it's obviously getting to him. I think this is uncharted territory for Jurgen Klopp, really. I mean, he's obviously had great success at Mainz, relatively speaking. Incredible success at Dortmund. But the tasks in those jobs have been slightly different, and the sort of working environment and the challenges around them were different to Liverpool. So each of those clubs, he'd have players taken away from him without him really having a say in it. Liverpool have reached a point now where, you know, in theory, they're the club the players would want to join. And it's up to him really to pick and choose when, you know, a player's time is up. So he's experiencing something quite new, I think, and hasn't really been spoken about too much. You know, the job that he faces at Liverpool in 2021 is very different to the one that he had in Dortmund after the Champions League final, for example, when they lost, they lost a couple of players that summer. So it's, I do think it is going to come a point where, you know, his judgment's going to have to come into play, where he's going to have to decide whether some of these players do have to move on. I mean, I do think that part of that process has already started, because we've seen Curtis Jones pushed into the first team. We've seen Diogo Jota signed and having an impact. I think both of those players, you could say, have had, you know, really good seasons. I mean, Curtis Jones, for me, I think, has been the bright spot in a difficult season. I know he's sort of had a few off games, but you sort of expect that for a young player. But He has influenced some big games as well, you know, which is a really encouraging sign. But, you know, you sort of do get the impression that, you know, particularly the front three, so much is expected of them. Firmino, for me, hasn't been at it. You know, there's a problem with his first touch. I think what some of his running stats are so high because he's chasing after his first touch all the time, some of the times. And I think he needs to... You can't have an argument where you say for many years, Firmino is the key player in this team, which allows the team to get up the pitch. But then when the team's not playing and he's not performing in that it's not his fault. I'm not saying it's one player's fault, but when the centre forward has that pressing responsibility and he's not quite doing it to the same level, it does have a knock-on effect further back the pitch. And let's not forget, further back the pitch, you've got lots of problems in terms of the availability. So it's a structural problem, a confidence problem. There's a lot for Jürgen Klopp to solve, I think.
You mentioned Klopp being subdued recently. Do you think that he saw this coming when, before Christmas, he was getting into a bit of a conflict with Des Kelly on BT about the resting of players and the pile-up of games? That seemed like the almost Jose when things weren't going so well for him at Chelsea, for example, coming out and fighting before Christmas. He probably saw what was about to happen, did he?
I'd agree with that, yeah. I mean, his team, as we know, as we've already discussed, is a team that's based on high energy, which requires availability, and is going to have a lot of wear and tear on the players, which is why he knows that it's important to have those discussions about the number of games that Liverpool play in terms of the number of games that when they're playing. I can understand why he wants that argument. It's obviously, you know, in self-interest, but which manager doesn't speak in self-interest? Equally, I do think he realises as well that you know, it's not just Liverpool's performances this season. I would argue that, you know, that being the quality of the Premier League football this year has been reflective of the pandemic and the challenges around that. I can't think of too many games which have sort of blown me away in terms of the level of quality in there. So I think he does have a broader point, you know, that the, you know, you're asking players to play, and it's affecting the quality of the football. But equally, I think it particularly affects his team because of the requirements, because of the style of the football that Liverpool play. So, yeah, I mean, he's argued, I mean, when he spoke about these issues to Des Kelly and to various other people, this was nothing new. He'd spoken for many years about this, about his fears of burnout. I did think at the time, you know, that perhaps he's got a responsibility to remind Liverpool's owners of this as well, because, you know, they go on these pre-season tours, which are okay, very lucrative in terms of the money that they make. But you can't have it both ways, can you? So I think he did see it coming, yeah, I'd agree with that.
Was Thiago's signing supposed to change the style of the play enough to ease some of the wear and tear, or is that an oversimplification?
Yeah, I don't think it was built to change the style of play. I mean, I think there was a feeling when he signed that he would be able to vary the style of play when needed, to change the pace of the style of play as well. Equally, you know, let's not forget Wijnaldum's contract situation. I think it was a preemptive move against his, it seems like an inevitable departure now. I mean, I've got some sympathy with Thiago because he came into the club, obviously contracted coronavirus, which didn't allow him to make the sort of start that he'd want to make, and then had, you know, he's out for 2.5 months due to a bad injury, and then has come back into the team when it's on its down a little bit. So it's difficult. No matter what standard of football you are in those sorts of circumstances, I think it's always going to be quite hard to sort of put your impression on the team. Not just a team that's sort of out of form, a team that's not functioning in the same way it normally would do. I would say that the Goodison Derby against Everton was his best performance, and it's no coincidence that in that game he had Jordan Henderson and Fabinho alongside him for a big part of that game, and he performed very well then. So, I mean, there's not really any Liverpool player, I think, comes through this season with a great deal of credit other than, Curtis Jones and Andy Robertson, I think, has had a good season. But I think in recent weeks, months, I think the lack of opportunity to be able to have a rest, which Shinnecast was brought in for, of course, has shown as well.
Are you concerned, Simon, that the hierarchy at Liverpool, the owners of Liverpool, might not be willing to make the correct decisions this summer to ensure that Liverpool get back to win the Premier League or at least challenge for the Premier League next season?
Well, I found the newspaper reports in England interesting over the last couple of days, you know, the suggestion that they are going to back Jurgen Klopp. I mean, it was said that there's a feeling that the team doesn't need an overhaul. There's a feeling that if Liverpool can get the players fit again, the key players fit and have the appropriate amount of rest over the summer, which is going to be interesting given there's a European Championship, that next season, you know, these have a much better chance of getting closer to where they want to be. I think that they're going to need to make two top quality signings, really, in certain departments. I think central defence is still a glaring problem. And then further up the pitch, I think there needs to be more support in attack as well. And you'd like to think that the midfield would have players playing in the correct positions when some sense of normality resumes. So I can understand the question marks around it because in terms of the way the owners have run the club, they've run the club over since they came to England, came to the Premier League and started owning Liverpool on real terms, you know, in terms of the buying and selling and the trading that they've done. So they're going to, you can't have it both ways. You can't sort of praise them for doing that. And then suddenly it sounds like the sort of suggestion there might be a little bit of a departure from that process in the summer to get Liverpool closer to where they want to be. But I mean, I also think that there's one thing that's sort of been not really been spoken about too much in the discussion about why Liverpool weren't able to go and sign players. They had three players last summer that they did want to sell, but they had expectations of revenues coming in of around £60 million for those players. And you know, in a pandemic, it's difficult to judge what value is. But I think that had some of those players been sold, I'm talking about Sheridan Shaqiri here, Harry Wilson, and possibly Divock Origi as well. If those players had been sold, then possibly Liverpool might have had the funding to go and get the centre half that he did need. In the January transfer window. I think there's a lot of pressure on Michael Edwards this summer, the sporting director, because he's going to have to trade well to create the real financial environment that allows Liverpool to go and sign the players that will make them a team that is capable of finishing higher than eighth, put it that way.
He's been brilliant so far, and that's kind of maybe an underrated part of that whole jigsaw. You have the totemic manager whose style perfectly aligns with what the fans want. You have incredible success in the transfer market, and particularly in terms of realising value for squad players or for players who probably didn't particularly fit the style. And then most of the incomings have been a success. Certainly the big ticket ones, which you needed to change the culture of the team and to change the culture of the dressing room, they work straight away. That's the goalkeeper and the centre-back I'm obviously talking about. I mean, some of the other ones haven't been massively successful. And Jota looks like it's a good signing, we'll see. But that's a lot of pressure to keep hitting everything all the time. Most of the world's big super clubs have massive failures along the way, but because they're so big, they trundle along. Like if you look at the amount of money that Man City have wasted, the amount of money Manchester United have wasted over the last decade. So that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, there's a lot more pressure at Liverpool because of the economic landscape in which they operate. They can't really afford to have many sort of high profile mistakes. I mean, you mentioned there are other clubs that have spent in advance of £40-50 million, £60 million on players that just haven't worked. If that happens at Liverpool, there's a consequence. I think Naby Keita potentially could be one of those players where it hasn't worked out. He obviously spent a lot of money to bring him to Liverpool. He's now at the end of his third season, struggling for fitness. I mean, it'd be pretty spectacular from here, you know, if he was able to go and become a regular in the first team, because 3 seasons is a long time. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is more pressure on Michael Edwards, but with the pressure that does come natural expectation, I think his records in the early years was when he didn't necessarily have the title to go with the responsibility that he had. I think his record in that time wasn't so great. I think that was partly as well because, you know, a difference of opinion with Brendan Rodgers, for example, about the profile of the player that Liverpool was trying to sign. I think Jürgen Klopp makes his job easier because he's got a very clear idea of who he wants, and yet he is also willing to listen to the people who are in control of the transfer system at Liverpool. So, you know, Salah would be an example of that. Jürgen Klopp wanted to sign Julian Brandt. He was his preference at the time. And Dave Fallows, who is essentially the chief scout, was like, no, we should really go and get Salah. And that's been proven to be a really smart move and an example of when it works at Liverpool, how effective it can be. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, that Liverpool will need to sell some players this summer to boost the coffers and allow them to bring some new players in. And I think it's an interesting summer ahead because, as I said, nobody really knows what value looks like at the moment, I think. Mm. And I think the people who quickest appreciate what a good deal is and are able to operate according to the new financial sort of environment of football, which is going to take a hit because of everything that's going on. I think those teams will be ahead of other teams. So, yeah, I mean, it's unrelenting at Liverpool, really. You know, I accept Michael Edwards had a very good sort of 5 years, really, since Jürgen Klopp's come, but the challenge never stops, does it? So he's going to have to be very quick in this summer. And I think the pressure, as I agree with you, I think the pressure on him is probably greater than sporting directors at other clubs where he can afford to make a lot more mistakes, I think.
Simon, great to have you with us again. Cheers.
Thanks.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.